The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Starman. This is our 16th episode where we're going to be talking about issue 15 of volume 2 of Starman, Sins of the Child, part 4 or 5.
Yay.
I'm excited.
Yes, me too. Yeah. Already at part 4 or 5.
I know. It's this storyline's going pretty fast.
Yep. So, what happened in January of 96 when Starman issue 15 came out? I'm here to tell you.
I was getting worried. I was like, wait a minute. Is this a trick question?
It's not. I'm supposed to do that thing today. And the thing is, I only have one thing.
Two.
I have two.
Nice.
Okay, I have two. Okay, first, in January 1996, on the 1st of January, Betty Rubble debuts as a Flintstone vitamin.
Really?
After 27 years. Did you ever have those? Did you ever eat those?
Of course.
You know, I have a horrible story about it. Okay, it's not horrible, but I never liked to eat vitamins, even though my doctor always told my mom that I had to take them.
Mm.
But, so I would be, okay, fine, I will try to take them. And then I would go to the pharmacy, and then I would choose the Flintstone vitamins because they were so cute, and I will never eat them, even though they were so expensive.
Was Flintstone's vitamins, those ones, our body strong and growing, right? That was the Flintstone kids theme song.
I can't remember. I don't know if I had, like, if we had the commercial in Singapore, but we did have the cartoon. It was just, it was the only vitamin with a cartoon on the shelf.
did you ever hear this was the urban legend of why there was no Betty?
No, what's the story behind it?
The one I always heard, and you know, I'm just spreading this, even though I do not know if it's true or not. I'm not gonna look it up. I'm just not gonna. Was that the way the character design of Betty was from the cartoons? Was that her waist was too thin?
Okay.
That if they used the kind of the silhouette design, the outline that they did for like all the other vitamins, that she would be too thin in the middle and would more than likely snap in half in the vitamin jar.
Oh.
And then I guess someone said, "Hey, wait a minute, we don't actually have to make it that thin. It's a vitamin. No one's gonna be like, I don't know, this Betty looks a little too chunky, if you know what I mean."
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
And you know, that's always just what I heard.
Okay. Thank you. Wow, I didn't know that. That would have that's very interesting if it were true. And well, even if it's not true, it's still interesting. Okay. So anyways.
Regardless of truth, it's interesting.
It is. On January 3rd, 1996, the first flip phone, the Motorola StarTAC, goes on sale. I remember this phone!
Fancy.
I remember the StarTAC. My dad had one.
Ooh.
Flip phone. Yeah. I think flip phones were, you know, my dad had the one before the flip phone, the huge chunky one that looked like a brick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had that. And then we did have a StarTAC. I can't remember which year it was, but this was 96. I think we had it after. No, I can't remember. I was 8 in 1996. But flip phones, I don't see a lot of them now.
No, I think since the smartphone really took off, they've all but disappeared.
Yeah, but you know, Japan is kind of strange in this respect. There are a lot of, there's still a lot of people who aren't using smartphones.
Yeah, yeah, like holdouts.
Yeah, holdouts. Yeah, but in Singapore, everyone uses a smartphone. Oh, except my grandmother. My grandmother uses one of those candy bar Nokia types.
I think I know some businesses that kind of supply phones for business use for their workers.
Uh-huh.
I know some of them in Japan still use the flip phones and stuff, like the simple phones.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really know why. I wonder if it's one of those like, nope, this way you're just using it for business call purposes and you're not doing like games or driving up internet that we're going to have to pay for.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. You know, in Singapore, I have quite a few friends who are working for the military, and you can't bring camera phones into the workplace if you work for the military.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they have it disabled, or they get a phone without a camera.
Wow, that's actually probably hard to find nowadays.
Right. Like, yeah, but it happens, so...
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that happens a lot. And because we have reservists, so, you know, civilian mobilization, I think that's what it's called. Mm. So every Singaporean male, usually, they will own a camera-less phone. So whenever they get called back for emergency training or whatever it's called, they have a phone they can bring into the army camp.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. Huh. Tidbit.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Yeah.
I'm done with my segment.
So you might be asking, what happened in this issue?
Yes. Tell me.
Here is our synopsis. So we start in the morning with Mikal Thomas. Tomas? Mikal, yeah. Tomas? There's no H. I don't know. enjoying the sun before we quickly revisit the events before and after Jack's trial. Then the secret behind Grundy and Mikal's... I've been calling him Michael too long. It's going to just keep eating at my head. They made me call him Michael. They spelled it Michael, and now it's Mikal. Mikal's disappearance is finally revealed, as is the fifth missed murder. Mikal and Grundy are being held by some of the Mist's henchmen, the leader of which, Frankie Soul, has a grudge against the Blue Starman. Frankie enjoys two things, talking and... beating Mikal senseless, which is what most of this issue consists of. But when Frankie leaves, the subordinate henchmen decide on the best way to kill Grundy. This snaps Mikal into explosive action, which happens in our timeline at 9:50 p.m.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if James Robinson... ever hears this podcast and he's like, it's not Mikal, it's Mikal.
I think if it was Mikal, there would be like another apostrophe.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, he would probably not be, I don't know, he'd probably actually be going like, why are they talking so much about Starman? These people need to find a better hobby. Doop-a-doop-a-doop. I'm going to go win an Eisner. That's... my James Robinson impression, which is not accurate at all.
Yes. Okay. But thank you for the synopsis.
You're welcome.
Okay. So, I like this issue, even though there was a lot of talking from that guy.
Yeah, it was...
What's his name?
Frankie Soul?
Frankie Soul. Oh, he's so such a slimeball.
He is.
Yeah. So...
I liked it, too. There wasn't... plot-wise, out of the last couple of issues, like, this was almost the simplest of the Sins of the Child issues. But, you know, I don't... It's not that that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Huh. I liked it because it showed us... Well, I don't know, it sounds strange, but the friendship between Michael and Sully.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Like, I liked it too.
Aww. Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, one of the neat things about thinking about that and then looking at the cover to issue 15 is you can look at the expression on Mikal's face and really read that as kind of that pained expression of like, what's happening to my friend?
Yeah. And it's the first time that I've noticed this, but his eyes aren't conventional. It's like turned to one side. Like it's not in the... I would expect his eyes to face upward or, you know, looking out of the cover to us, but it's like, you know, cast sideways. Yeah,
it's looking at something over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but major spoilers for the last scene on the cover.
Yes. although I do think on this issue, the way the covers have been working in the past, they've either been kind of a depiction of something or just kind of an iconic representation of the events. So this is a nice, like, you finish the issue and go like, oh, right, that's what's going on. But there's, you know, like, I think we kind of talked about the same thing with Bliss earlier on. How it's, you know, you could kind of view it as a spoiler, but to really know that it's a spoiler, you'd already have to know what's going on. So it's not really a spoiler.
True. Okay. I accept that. Okay.
Yeah, it does look very sci-fi.
It does. Do you notice that his mouth is incredibly red?
Yes. I've noticed that his mouth is incredibly red, that his teeth, for the most part, seem a little bit pointier.
Are those the incisors? I've never been good with teeth names.
Yeah, I think... those are the incisors, but even the ones like one back from the incisors still look a little pointy.
Fang-like. Yeah. Alright. That's about it for the cover, I guess. It's just Mikal screaming, and then we turn the page.
Mm. And let's go ahead and give credit to the creators behind this issue, which is our writer, James Robinson, penciler, Tony Harris, inker, Wade Von Grobiger, colorist, Ted McKeever, so a new colorist for this issue, not Gregory Wright, letterer, Bill Oakley, assistant editor, Chuck Kim, and editor, Archie Goodwin.
All right.
So, I don't know if this just shows my personal beverage choices, but every time I open this comic and look at this first page... It takes me a few seconds to realize that Mikal is not holding a glass of wine. Every single time, I'm like, oh, he's got wine. That's not wine. That's like a lamp thing.
Ah, it never struck me that it was wine. I thought it was a candle.
I can see a candle, you know, but first I see wine.
Okay. I can see why, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the way his hair is like, windswept.
Yeah.
The color of his hair. It's like this fiery magenta. I like it. It contrasts. It's the only, like, it's the thing that pops out in this picture because all the colors are very pastel. Except for his shirt. It's nice. It's a nice shade of purple. It's what? What's it? Hawaiian shirt. That's right. Mm-hmm. It looks like a Hawaiian shirt.
Huh. I wonder. I do not know enough about color theory to say. I wonder if you were to kind of... I guess no, it wouldn't. But yeah, I was wondering if you could... If you were to combine the blue of Michael's skin tone with the magenta of his hair, if it would kind of turn towards that purple.
Oh.
But I don't think the balance is quite right. But that's...
Huh. Interesting. Anyone can answer us? Okay. So, first page.
Yeah.
I like the, again, you know, the words. I love the words. The when everything line. When the last time we had the when everything line discussion as well. So this one, it says, when everything seems Jelly Bear Opera and Crepe Paper Pirate. And I was like, oh, you mentioned that Tony Harris likes pirates, and
yes, he does.
They snuck it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't make sense, you know, Crepe Paper Pirate or Jelly Bear Opera, and that kind of gives you an idea of what goes on in Mikhail's head.
That and the glow warm, cold snap still, birds swinging by, soothe.
Yeah. The lack of spaces and the... What is the name for this? There's a name for like this nonsensical kind of mood. I can't remember that word. I fail at English.
All I can think is like stream of thought type stuff, but I don't think that's what you're going for.
Yeah, it ended with like itty. I can't remember what itty it was. Anyone can tell us?
What are we talking about? Contact us. By going to Comics League International on Facebook and letting us know in the comment section what we're talking about.
Yes. All right.
How I think this is the second issue in a row that the L's and the all are lengthening. We're getting more L's in the all because through the repetition.
Oh. Wait, the repetition of the L?
Like if you look and of course you know that by 12 o'clock it's all going to change.
On that all,
if you look at the other books, because I think last issue it was three L's, maybe it was four,
I
two.
I didn't catch that!
Yeah, because it's kind of, they keep on using that same refrain.
They're kind of
drawing attention to the similarities by stretching it out a little bit.
Okay. Cool.
I'm curious if, since this is part four and there's four L's, if part five will have five L's.
Yeah. And then, Mikhail is gazing into the it's not sunset, it's like 8:44,
yeah,
so
the
it's...
The morning sun.
Ted calls him Michael. Michael, I'm leaving. Will you be all right alone?
I bet that's exactly how he said it, too.
No, he probably said it. Michael, I'm leaving. Will you be all right alone?
I like the musical theater version. I'm leaving. Will you be all right alone? Yeah. And it'd be like a little flute for Michael.
And then, he doesn't say anything. He just sort of, like, raises his hand. Yeah, but it's a simple thing that's taking place, but Ted is... He doesn't treat... It's not like Michael is his pet.
Yeah. You know,
this is like, a real person that he lives with, so he has to take care of him and give him notice of when he's coming. Yeah.
It's a nice balance of showing that he is both respecting the fact that Michael Mikhail is an adult, while also showing kind of concern about him.
Yeah.
Because he's not, you know, talking down to him, be like, hey there, stupid head. You're gonna be fine, huh? Huh? Mm.
Yeah. I know what I mean. I don't know, I kind of feel like Ted is a surrogate. Surrogate? Is that the word?
Yeah.
Okay. Surrogate father to Michael and Grundy, and you know, it's called Sins of the Child. So if we were to sort of understand it like this, I don't know. Am I running off on tangent here?
No, I like where you're going with it. I think I have some preconceived notions as to what that is that we might need to put on hold until till next issue. Not that I'm saying it involves spoilers.
Yeah. But okay. But apart from that, we've been talking a lot about Nash and how, you know, she's murdering people, and that too. I mean, she's a child of the mist, right?
Yes. So,
like, that also ties in with the sins of the child. In the beginning, I thought it was just, you know, Jack and him being the son of Ted, and you know, sins of the child would all be about how Jack screwed up. But it's not like that. I think it's more of like, to me, the more I read it, the more prominent is the theme of Nash murdering people. And then, you know, in this issue you talked about that guy who talks a lot and beats up people, I cannot
remember his
name.
Frankie,
thank you. So Frankie too, you know, he involves his father in the conversation, so you know, things like that. So tie-in.
It really does kind of like all link together, because and we'll get to it, but you could say is in a way is the sins of the child, if we view in a way Michal as a child of Ted and Frankie both as his obviously his father's son, but it's that kind of relationship of a son to Frankie's father that kind of brings that wrath upon him. But then again, it's also Frankie's actions that ultimately in a way lead to the cliffhanger ending of this particular comic.
Right.
So there are kind of wheels within wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, with that in mind, we see Ted leaving the house to Sully and Michal, and he goes off for Jack's courtroom hearing. Right. And then we find the scene that appeared in the past few issues where Sully and Michal are hanging out in the garden, and it's because Sully wanted to go out.
Yeah.
So cute. Okay. And then we see them hanging out until Jack finishes his hearing.
Yeah.
And they come home, right?
Yeah.
So they've been out for a long time, I think.
Well, you know, 2 hours. 2 hours. But it's a pretty day.
Okay. You know? It's the same spot. Okay. I don't really like to go out. So.
You're afraid of nature.
A little bit, yeah. I actually am. I'm very deathly afraid of pigeons, actually.
Really?
Yes, yes. Completely afraid of pigeons.
So I shouldn't do my pigeon impression.
You have one. It's okay. You're on the other side of the Kanto plane, so it's okay.
Noises through the internet.
Yeah. Okay. So they are in nature, and they are fine for a bit until 11:32.
Base 11:33, because we have the 11:32 when Michal is kind of using the I don't know if it doesn't really seem to be a zap type thing, but kind of like you know, using his energy powers on Grundy in a way to maybe might even just be like, hey, look, neat light show type thing.
Yeah.
But then out jump the bad guys who are. Their first action is to stab Sally and Mikal with drugs.
Yeah. You know, I have this theory. Mm. I don't know whether it's going to show, prove me wrong in the fifth part of this, mm-hmm. but what if Mikal was, he sensed the bad guys at 11:32 and he sort of like gave Grundy a protective cover.
Ooh.
I don't know. And then, because right in the next minute, the bad guys pop up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what a great, on that page, what a great double page spread.
Yeah. Of just
the attack. I mean, we've had, if we don't count last issue, mm. you know, this, we've had two issues kind of surrounding this disappearance.
Mm.
And finally we get to see it. And I like how the scene they show us is, mm. it's not the slow creep up. It's just the bam, right in the middle of the attack.
Right, right. Yeah. When you turn the page, it's like, oh, seriously, when I turned the page, it was like, oh, so this is what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It really yeah. jumps out.
Yeah. And it speeds the story up a lot as well.
Yes.
You know, you only have a set number of pages. It must be, it's always like, what, 20, how many?
20. Yeah, with the double page spreads in this one, because there's like two or three double page spreads, so we really only have 20 pages of story if we count the double pages as taking the place of one.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, so when, I don't know, I always feel like comic books are very short.
Yeah.
I mean, all comic books are short.
And modern ones have gotten even shorter.
Yeah, so to really pack a story in it, you have to think about, you know, how you want to make use of that medium, and mm-hmm. you know, to complete that story within that set time frame. And I think they really did a good job with this one.
Yes, yes. Another thing I think they did a very good job with on this page is making sure all of the villains who are wearing the, you know, generic villain jumpsuit all still look different.
Right.
Hairstyles, slightly different physiques. At least there's one guy who seems a lot chunkier than the others. But this doesn't look like the same five people. They're definitely five individuals who happen to be generic villains.
Yep. Agreed. Alright, next page.
The flower.
Flower.
I keep going back and forth on this flower. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be the flower for the artist on the following page, but I keep on thinking about how, you know, Grundy being a plant person, if this also ties something in with, like, Grundy's being wounded.
Oh. If you're listening, tell us. Yeah. No, but really, I get what you mean. Yeah, it's one of those subliminal things that link up to the story at large, but it's up to you to interpret.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It connects to Grundy, and if we look on the another page, we see the Murder 5, but there don't seem to be roses, necessarily. There's a flower bush nearby, but they don't... It could be roses. It looks a little different than roses, though.
Yeah. At the bottom of the page with the roses, there is the flower from the flower bush on the other page.
Ah.
But it's not the rose, so you don't actually see the rose in the picture with the artist. So, but maybe it's like, you know, at the other side. But I don't know.
I kind of like the idea of it just being, maybe it's one of those scenes that's in the Murder 5, but it also nice and links well with the attack on Solomon.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like it's the previous issue. I think there was that like those panels melting.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember this one has a similar effect, except it's the petals, one petal, I guess, of the rose melting to form a trail of blood.
Mm-hmm-hmm.
Yeah, so very little non, what's that called? It's it goes against the laws of reality in a way.
And I mean, the way the color is, it could also just be, it could hearken to the idea that this is a rose that has been splattered with blood from the murder and is therefore dripping. It just so happens the blood and the rose are the same color.
True.
Although the idea of the rose itself bleeding is very poetic and almost like not as in love romantic, but you know, a kind of a romantic idea.
Who died? Wilson May.
Whose murder we heard about on the radio in an earlier issue.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, I missed that. He draws buildings, I think. It's shown in a canvas by his side.
Mm-hmm-hmm.
Looks like a pretty familiar building. It must be one of those Opal City buildings. But anyway, we know that he's an artist and he died. And Nash is finding something. That's why she's murdering all these people. But she's not being able to find it at Wilson May's place. Okay.
Now this is the page before we move on that I feel there is a difference between the colors we've been getting from Gregory Wright to Ted McKeever. And in a way, it's that this palette, and I wish I knew enough to talk about colors a bit more intelligently, but this scene, the colors all seem a bit more pastel or a bit more washed out.
Yeah,
I feel the colors we've been given so far have been a bit more bold.
Yeah.
You know,
but they are all pastel colors.
Here, yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of through this, they've been there, whereas I think the Gregory Wright colors have been a bit more, like, stronger colors and a bit more, like, in-our-face, bold colors.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to say this is, like, which one is better than the other, but having the world be a bit more colored, more colorful, more bold, does kind of feel like this is a very washed out page.
I see. Interesting pickup.
Moving on.
Oh, wait.
Yes.
I know why.
Why?
Could it be because Wilson May, he's an artist, right? So maybe he paints in these colors. Because look at the paint that's like mixed in his blood. It's like this pastel purple. Mm. And the canvas on his beside his, corpse.
Mm.
Yeah, they're kind of pastel as well. And the splotches of paint.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It could be one of those things.
It could be. It almost feels like that would lead down to what, like, is diegetic, is that the word I'm looking for?
I have no idea what that means.
You know, like when you're listening, when you're watching a movie and you hear a song, if it's, geez, now I'm going to get them confused in my head. It's whether or not the song you're hearing is existing in the world of the movie or if it's just background. Like, kind of saying, like, are the pastel colors here, are they pastel colored in this scene because those are the pastel colors that Wilson May works in, or are they the pastel colors that perhaps, I keep on forgetting his name, Nerds, that Ted McKeever likes to work in.
So it's, I see. Diegetic?
Diegetic, is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, now, like, I had it in my head which one was which right before I started talking, and the moment I started talking about it, I got confused, like, wait a minute, is diegetic the one that exists in the world?
Yes, of or relating to artistic elements that are perceived as existing within the world depicted in a narrative work.
Yay.
Mm,
intro to film studies. Huzzah!
All right. So, now that we've finished talking about colors, we go on to a page with black and white.
Lots of black and white. Like, and violence. Nasty white. Violence.
Yeah. Oh, but one thing is, I was really impressed with how they used, like, these grids of nothing. Like, it's yes. just, you know. And then they kind of, like, had the faces of the villains blur in. That was like, wow. It's like, wow. It's like, you can see it in your head. It's like a moving picture. Yeah, but yeah. Comic book. Yeah, I was very impressed.
No, I really like all the art choices here of how we're seeing things through McCall's eyes for the first two pages of this scene. It's really nice.
Oh, I can hear ambulance.
Yeah, there was an ambulance.
Diegetic.
What do you mean? That's not existing in this world.
Okay. All right, back to the comic, though. the art you were saying?
Oh, of the choices of making the what Mikal sees be the point of view of the camera.
For
this, it's a nice choice and really puts us in the action.
Yeah. Yes. Again, one of those things that move the story forward. Mm-mm. So we see Mikal, he's looking at Grundy getting beat up, right?
Yeah.
And then Grundy is like reaching out to him, but then we see how the image kind of turns blurred again.
Yeah.
And then he blacks out, and then, you know, splash, and I don't know, it's like, it moves the, it's very, you know, it's still very fluid, very mobile, the entire exchange conversation that the bad guys have with Mikal. Yeah, so, and the way that the villains are being drawn, it's, look at that last grit there with Frankie. Is this Frankie or is this another guy?
That's Frankie. The one where he's talking about the chloroform?
Yeah. His face is so twisted and that snarl.
Oh, yeah. He looks very just wolfish.
Yeah. That's like, I don't know, to have that expression being drawn out like that, I was just really impressed. And like that, it captures that kind of, like, I am a nasty person.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great acting. That Tony Harris is able to give to the characters, where it feels like an expression someone would have. It doesn't feel like a posed shot in a way.
It feels
real.
Yeah, that's exactly what I felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. And so here we learn that Mikal, he has been out for a long time.
Yeah.
And do we flip the page?
Oh, let's.
Now, bam, we have light.
And it's a not really nice apartment.
Yeah, it's not from his point of view anymore. It's from our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Right, coming to you from the fourth wall. So we see the villains kind of lounging about in the living room.
Yeah.
And this is the Mist's apartment, right? Did they say it already?
No. Did they?
Oh, not yet, not yet. Oops, yeah. spoilers. Okay, anyway. Again, I'm kind of, like, washed out, right?
Yeah. This, to me, this is, in a way, this is one of the, because of the skill of Tony Harris, this is kind of one of the harder issues to read. Simply because, like, I mean, James Robinson does a great job, too, because the main character, the character who controls this scene, is just a bastard. Like, right now, he's just a nasty piece of work. And pretty much the rest of this comic is, hey, you know what I like doing? Hurting people. Like, it's just, it's just uncomfortable to really just kind of sit and think about it.
Yeah. About the washed out colors, though. I feel like the color scheme really brings out Mikal and Grundy here because of their blues.
Yes.
And their reds. So it's a really nice choice of color as well.
Yeah. Having their clothes be some of the darker, brighter.
Brighter.
Colors, the most eye-catching colors on the page.
Right. Yeah, it makes you immediately zoom into the action, I think, because they are being hit. So,
yeah.
This is a semi-two-page spread as well, I guess.
I don't know exactly how we'd break down the page talk of this, but it's... Yeah.
Okay. He hits. It's just a small thing, but when Frankie hits Mikal, that do you see that grid where his knuckle is out of the out of the line?
Yeah.
That's cool, huh?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, where they nice break touch. break the panel?
Yeah.
I've read reports of, like, knowing when and how to break the panel is definitely a skill. You know, of knowing, like, yep, this one, we're showing how he punches and make the fist seem like it's going a little bit farther, a little bit faster.
That was, like, a really bad punch.
Yeah.
I mean, a good punch, if you think about it. Yeah. But it's bad for Mikal.
And I guess the only real thing we get from this particular page, besides just, you know, the characterization of Frankie, is that there is a history between Mikal and Frankie's father.
Yep. But he also talks about his father on the next page, right?
We get more.
Okay, so next page.
Yes.
Okay.
I like Solomon's use of kind of nicknames. Like earlier, we had Jack Star. He keeps calling the call like Blue or Blue Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another thing that kind of paints him as a bit of an innocent.
Agreed. Yeah. Interesting how this Starman uses characters like these. Nash too was kind of like, you know, innocent and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have Grundy, who flung Jack about in a sewer, but he's like cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, so interesting.
And we also gotta like how, I mean, because Grundy in other appearances, prior appearances, have been shown as, you know, as pretty much a powerhouse, an almost like Hulk-like figure for the DC world. And here we just get like a little bit of mild exposition, kind of all explaining right. away why he's not, you know, why he's not really a threat here. Oh, yeah, yeah, science.
He's a big monolithic plant man.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. And all it takes is some you know, weed killers and toxins.
Yeah.
And there you go. Now he's just a thing.
Yeah. Killing him is difficult, as Frankie reveals. But somehow, when he talks about Mikal, it doesn't seem like Mikal is very hardy. It's easier to kill him. The way that he presents it, like, you know, you can be our bargaining chip and stuff like that. So that comes later, maybe. I'm not sure.
I think so.
Yeah, but on the other page, can we talk about the other page with him talking a little bit about his dad?
On the next page, sure.
Yes. Mm. He talks about his dad, and then the thing is, when I was reading it. Mm. No, villains, they're bad people, but to them, for them to be able to be this evil and still pay, what's that word, and still treasure these familial bonds, just boggles my mind, because he's basically saying that he is vengeful because of his dad.
Yeah.
You know, and it means that he must have really loved his dad. I don't know.
Is how it really comes across. I mean, is this a case where Louis Soul was a really bad man, but a air quote really? Good father?
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know. If it were like this, wouldn't they have a shred of good in them for them to have a conscience like that to care for someone like that? You know, it just makes me feel that way. Or perhaps it's one of those like you have brought shame to my family name. I don't know.
Or, I mean, maybe this is just a demonstration of a different morality that was kind of put into place through the Soul family of, you know, where they can have warmth and affection and still not really place a lot of value on the life of someone outside their family. Maybe this is the penultimate, like, or the ultimate us and them type family. We're a family. They're not worthwhile.
They're insects.
Crush them, son. Crush them.
Is that from somewhere? I'm not sure.
You know, generic villain talk.
Okay. I have a friend who would, like, quote movies, like lines from movies, and be able to get the voices right on, you know, very accurately, but I would never know which movie he's referencing until I identify the movie, then I know that, okay, yeah. he does this, so I was wondering if he did that.
No.
But I, you mean, don't, sometimes. It's generic. Okay, so the villains, we get a close-up of the others as well.
Mm.
Well, yeah, a sort of close-up. I mean, Frankie introduces his crew.
Yeah, of Sammy and Brody and Geiger. And and then,
blacks out again. Yeah, but they are possibly equally as vile looking as Frankie. So, and they take pleasure in hurting people. So we have the next two pages are just, you know, Frankie beating Mikal to a pulp, you know, green blood everywhere.
Yep, yep.
But he talks a lot.
He talks a lot about detective fiction. Were you familiar with any of the stuff he was talking about?
Not at all. Do you read detective?
A little bit. I've read a little bit of Raymond Chandler. I've read some of the Philip Marlowe books. Admittedly, I haven't seen that many of the movies. But it is kind of just the thing of how much this guy, who's just the villain, enjoys the kind of Philip Marlowe world. If you think of the idea of the detective, the black and white detective, that's basically a Philip Marlowe thing.
Oh, okay.
Probably a dame in there somewhere. And I mean, admittedly, I'm painting with a pretty wide brush, but it is that kind of idea of the 1930s good guy, but not quite, who is in a way a world of gray, but still very much on the good guy side of it. And there's just something.
I get it.
Yeah. How he's talking about how much he, in a way, enjoys those things. But he would definitely be the low rent villain in those stories.
Yeah. I don't think Grundy or Mikal actually get a word in edgewise here. It's all Frankie talking.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Okay, so since it's just him talking, do we move on?
I say we just move on, because other than saying this is really brutal, lots of just painful, powerful hits to both Mikal and Grundy. I don't feel the need to really analyze the depth of Elliot Gould versus Humphrey Bogart.
Okay.
Yeah. Why don't we skip do we want to skip to after Frankie leaves?
Okay, so we skip the next page and the next page.
After Frankie leaves, it's still just the other two guys, Baldy and Wolverine haircut.
Yeah.
Just more painful things of them pouring alcohol and smacking.
Horrible. Yeah. Grundy, poor Grundy. I mean, they hit Grundy's head with a bat.
Yeah.
It's really brutal
to watch.
Yeah.
And then we find out these guys are, they're not just, there's the sometimes you see henchmen, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, the henchmen are they're criminals, but they're not necessarily evil. They're just people caught up. But
these guys are scum.
Oh my goodness. Having the conversation about, well, the last guy I burned up, he just was boring after he stopped kicking.
Yeah.
And the other guy wanted to,
the rays and stuff.
Yeah, and chop him up with an axe.
Yeah.
Because it's what the idea of who gets to kill Grundy is a literally a game to them.
Yeah. So there's no concept of, respect or life. Any of that is just something to be thrown away or taken advantage of. It culminates in a game, like a real game, a race, where one of them says, the $20 and I'll race you, count to 20, and if I'm back with the axe, I get to chop him up. If I'm not, then you get to burn him.
Yeah.
And Michael is awake for all of this. So when they start counting, right?
Yeah. And when the counting starts, there's that clock
image
that appears that just keeps on going all the way around to 20, but only when it's in the villain guy. And what I really like about this sequence is the expression change on Michael.
Yeah, the acting, like what you said, the whole, I don't know how to describe this. He's like struggling to keep himself awake, and then he's like,
And like just, you can see him like gathering up and trying to push out any form of power.
It is painful to watch.
It really is, because we get the 20 and the mat or the lighter, and then hey, I got the axe, and it's like any moment now there's going to be just violence.
Yeah, but before the bad guys can do anything to Grundy. We see Mikal shouting something in his language. And then that amulet, is that what it's called? On his chest. Like explodes in light.
The same light energy signature that's on the cover.
Yeah. Then last page, boom! 9:50 p.m. Yeah, and we the building explodes. I know, right?
I mean, even as horrific as these final 3-4 pages are, there is such an intense. There's a simple intensity to them, and I don't want to take it away by just calling it simple, but it builds so much, and just the nervous energy of it. Even just talking about it right now, I can kind of feel myself getting sucked in to the tension of the scene.
Right. Yeah. And looking back at the previous issue, I've got it open actually. It's 9:50 p.m. right?
On this
one. I think it's the, remember how I said like Barry wasn't doing his job and I was very upset with him and called him a douche. I think it's the one that he went to.
Ah.
Like he wasn't called to go anywhere, but Barry, he went to a building or something, I think. And it exploded at 9:50.
Yeah.
So it must have been the same one. Yeah.
I love the, you know, the use of times through these four issues and how it does paint that picture and fill in the spaces.
Good job, writers. So continuity.
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
We've both agreed that the henchmen shown in this issue are just absolutely reprehensible. Do you think that is so that when this explosion goes off, and I mean, we're looking at the explosion, there's very little reason to doubt that at least those two henchmen are kablooied. Is it so we can not only to give Michael that kind of push to go, but also so we're not left with any feelings of regret for the bad guys?
Oh, like no sympathy kind of thing?
Yeah, like absolutely none. Like there wasn't like a, hey, we're picked to do it, let's just do it and get it over with. There's none of that. There's like, let's enjoy this, woohoo!
Yeah.
And so the idea of them splattered does not seem like a terrible thing.
Yeah. I think that's exactly it. And also because this is fiction.
Oh, yeah. What?
I don't feel like I have any reason to sympathize or to give their lives any value. But if it were real life, I don't know, I might have a shred of compassion for them. I don't know. I watched this episode of Grey's Anatomy once. I've mentioned before on the show that I really like Grey's Anatomy's knack of bringing certain issues into mainstream media, even though it's basically a fictional vehicle. And there was this one about a serial killer, and I almost said it like cereal.
And I say it the same way. The breakfast product and the murdering type. Yeah, they're both cereal.
So that was this serial killer, and he was warded in hospital, and one of the doctors, well, Meredith Grey, she felt sorry for him, and she felt very troubled as to why she was feeling compassion for such a horrible man. But you know, this is, I guess that's what it is. It's sometimes there are people that deserve to, well, deserve to die.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that everyone will treat them the same way. There are very bad people, but there are also very good people in the world. You know, like how the people who feel compassion for a convict on death row. So I don't know, it's just one of those things that humans are unpredictable, and it's interesting how in fiction this comes up. Like, you know, we think about, why do we not have sympathy for this person, and why, what would it be like to be able to say that, okay, they might have families too, they might have reasons that have made them like this, you know, things like that.
I was just gonna say, like, the question that interests me is kind of in the situations of when you have the villains of knowing about them, knowing their humanity, does that make it a better or a worse story? And I think through at least this part, the sins of the child storyline, you know, in a way we're kind of getting both sides. Like, because with here, we're getting very much a one-dimensional barbaric view of these criminals who are placed in charge of Sally and Mike McCall. But you know, I'm trying to remember if this is me using future vision and knowing what comes up, or just kind of looking back, because we do get a bit more of a nuanced version of the actions of the Mist, of Nash. You know, or if nothing else, we're kind of given a bit more of a motivation of why she may be so full of hate towards Jack and his family. You know, the death of the one person she seemed to be close to.
Right, right. Yeah, I get what you mean. Oh well, we'll see.
Now, I don't know about you. I like this issue, but seeing that next issue, Jack's Day, the second half, really was like, that's the big issue. That's the one that comes up. And it was really hard to just not jump ahead and be like, I'm just going to go read it right now.
Yeah, me too. I wanted to go spoil myself, but I will persevere. But it's the fifth issue, next one. So that's part 5 of 5. It's the final one of this storyline. So I'm expecting, loose ends to be tied up.
And issue 17, to just look at the cover, does seem like it's a bit of an epilogue issue.
Oh, okay.
You know? Mm. But it's going to be exciting.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
I'm not even like going based on memory. I'm just going on the idea that like this has had such a great build to it that I'm just looking forward to it.
Yay.
Ta-da.
Okay.
So Lydia, where can they find you on the internets?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube, I guess. Say it with such conviction. Quack Channel is my
Sing
news,
us a song, Lydia. Sing us a song.
I will someday. I will. But seriously, maybe on this podcast we can have a Starman song. I don't know. Starman.
Jazz hands. Okay. Yay!
Yeah. Anyway, my username is Quek Channel. That's Quek Channel, and I'm the same username. I have the same username on all sorts of internets. How about you, Brent?
I do not. I am terrible at this. My Twitter is at Dead Troubadour. The book I wrote is Deadly Troubadours. With an S on the end, and my main writing page, my main homepage, is deadlytroubadour.com. It's all different. I should have just done Brent Thomas or Brent A. Thomas, but I think those might have been taken, and I just didn't feel clever, so now I'm all over the place. Because even on Facebook, I am Brent Thomas, the author page. I do have that, which you can like and kind of keep in touch with the show here. Or you can go to Comics League International. That's the for the comic show. That's for this. That's how you download and subscribe to this very show. All of that through there. Maybe even that. I'm even starting to wonder, like, maybe I should branch this off into its own show of just Brent and Lydia talk Starman, making it its own podcast. I'm not sure. There's so many decisions. So many.
Which is a good thing.
Patreon. I use Patreon. Patreon.com/Brent Thomas. It's where if you want to support these podcasts, if you want to support my writing, if you just want to, give me a monetarily pat on the back, I'd love a dollar. Help me make sure these shows are always available and boosting my what you call it, space,
ego.
That too, boost my ego, give me a dollar. That's pretty much the most honest way of saying it. Don't make me feel like I'm shouting in a vacuum. Give me a dollar.
Yay. Okay,
all right, that's all I got.
Me too.
Yeah, well, you know what then. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it. Let the children use it. Let all the children boogie.